This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry, and we've got an hour-long look at a somber week on this first Friday of May. This sad story out of Nigeria. Hundreds of girls. The government can't even nail down a figure of kidnapped schoolgirls. The number ranges from 150 to perhaps 300. This story of terrorism and chaos in Nigeria has been hard to follow in the noise of everything else going on in the world.
Breaking news tonight, a Malaysia Airlines plane carrying 239 people bound for Beijing is missing.
Government officials still piecing together information.
Families of the missing passengers shouting out as they meet with South Korea's president and learn the horrifying details of how the disaster unfolded.
But it wasn't always thus. In the 1970s, Nigeria's troubles were the focus of the world's attention. A civil war in Nigeria, what some call the Biafran conflict.
At 40 minutes past 4 p.m. today, Nigerian time, Africa's worst war came to an end, that between Nigeria and breakaway Biafra. Major General Philip F. Yang, left in charge of Biafra when General Ojukwu fled Sunday, announced the end on Radio Biafra, a mobile radio station.
The aftermath of this conflict in the 1970s has defined Nigeria and its instability in our time.
We have fought a long, bitter battle, and it has ended in a victory for common sense, victory for the unity of this country.
Nigerian General Yakubu Gowon in 1970. The terrified and angered parents of the kidnapped schoolgirls in Nigeria today, the government officials and their equivocal statements about the crisis, even the kidnapper leaders of the terrorist group Boko Haram, were all born into or came of age in the aftermath of the civil war that the whole world watched in Nigeria. But the world has seemingly turned away from Nigeria in this crisis, and it's something that has saddened and angered Nigerian writer and novelist Oke Ndibe. He's a visiting professor of African studies at Brown University. To be Nigerian today, Ndibe says, is a tragedy both peculiar and absurd.
Nigeria has become a country where the lives of the citizens don't seem to count, especially to government officials who proceed day after day with what I call the business of stealing the nation blind, even as hundreds and sometimes thousands of citizens die in senseless attacks by terrorist groups.
If you can't protect your citizens, if you can't protect girls in schools, then have you lost your legitimacy as a government?
The Nigerian government actually has never, in the 52-53-year history of the country, Nigerians have never been lucky in the Department of Leadership. As Chinua Achebe, the great Nigerian novelist, famously said, Nigeria is a country that has found a way to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. And so you have a country which has every reason and has all the talent and all the resources to achieve greatness. But somehow we continue to have mediocrity at the hem of the country's affairs. And so the country ends up in a rather terrible and unfortunate and tragic place.
Talk about your reaction to the headlines that we've all read around the world, the uncertainty over the numbers of the girls abducted, the lack of statements on the part of the government of what's actually going on to get their release. What are you hearing and how do you respond?
Well, my response is one of outrage. The fact that Nigerian officials can't even give us a count of the number of students who were abducted. How do you even know that you found them when you don't know how many are missing? And there's this old joke in Nigeria about a football coach who was asked how his team was going to win a game. And he said, we're going to fumble our way to victory. And so it seems to me that that's the same ethos that drives Nigerian affairs, that its leaders, they believe that somehow we're going to fumble our way to greatness.
Just looking at the landscape over the last few weeks, we've had a global hunt for a Malaysian airplane at the bottom of the sea. We've seen the minute-by-minute unfolding of the rescue and then unfortunate discovery of bodies in that South Korean ferry. And yet this Nigerian story is unfolding so differently. What does that say to you?
What it says to me is that there is a certain fatigue around the world about Nigeria, because this senselessness, this sense of tragedy has been so unremitting and has gone on for so long. In fact, for many years, that I think that after a while, the world sort of tunes out. And it's as if the rest of the world has said to Nigeria, you just figure out your mess, your tragedy. But it's unfortunate because ultimately it is the most vulnerable children who suffer in Nigeria. And there's a lot of suffering going on. Meanwhile, the people who are so-called leaders in the country continue to live it up. They continue to buy private jets and to travel and buy mansions around the world. And the tragedy has to stop. In the end, the reason that everybody in the world ought to be interested about the Nigerian tragedy is that unless the US and Europe and Britain and other African countries wake up and in a sense help to address this tragedy in progress in the country, it's going to spread and it's going to come to our doorsteps sooner or later.
What could your government do that would reassure you? What would you love to hear? Statements, actions?
The Nigerian government is good at giving speeches, giving press releases that assure the citizens to go out about their business. But we know that Nigeria has become, for a long time, a very abnormal location. And so what I'd like the government to do is to come up with a plan to combat the threat of Boko Haram. For example, it should be easy if the government used half a brain to infiltrate this group and then to undermine the activities of the group from within. It should be easy to acquire some surveillance technology that should be able to protect the most vulnerable locations that these terrorists attack. And then it should be possible to deploy the police and the military to guard institutions, especially, you know, school children have been slaughtered, you know, in their hundreds and thousands. It should be possible for the Nigerian government to roll out, not assure us anymore, because their assurances amount to very little or nothing. I want to see them take action, and I want to begin to see results.
If you were writing a story from the perspective of a young girl, school child in Abuja or Lagos or anywhere in Nigeria, what questions would that character in your novel or your story ask?
Well, the character in my novel, a vulnerable young character, would have a sense, be besieged, if you like, by a sense of the tragic. And this character would be wondering, why is it there's so much promise around me that I have talent that I want to unleash, but I am born in a country that continues to repress and to suppress and to deny me the opportunities to express myself fully.
Okay, and Ndibe is a visiting professor of African Studies at Brown University. His new novel, Foreign Gods Incorporated, was published in January. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.